from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The Islamic State has taken Ramadi, the capital in the heartland Iraqi province of Anbar, just 70 miles from Baghdad. Baghdad said they would hold it. They didn't. Washington said its anti-ISIS strategy was working. It does not look that way today. After all the American and Iraqi blood, sweat, and tears, can Iraq hold? How? And what if it doesn't? This hour on Point, Iraq after the fall of Ramadi. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you fight there? Is Baghdad next? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's go straight to Baghdad. Joining us there from the Iraqi capital is Noor Malis, correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. She's been covering all of this. Noor, welcome to On Point. What's the latest out of Ramadi? Is the Islamic State firmly in control there?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. Yes, Islamic State has been in control of Ramadi since Sunday. They have put out videos showing themselves touring around the city, showing some of the aftermath of the battle there over the weekend, and they're also marching eastwards in a string of districts east of Ramadi. Meanwhile, Shia militia, which the government here has called in to desperately try to reverse this loss, have also been mobilizing into the province, and we're waiting to hear both from the government of Iraq and the militia leaders themselves what the battle plan is for the next few days. It's going to be a pretty critical 24 to 48 hours to see what the strategy is to push back against Islamic State in Ramadi. It's been quite a dramatic setback here for the Prime Minister of Iraq, for the government, for the U.S.-led strategy here. It does feel like a year ago when Islamic State marched into Mosul, the country's second largest city. Ramadi wasn't that strategic. It's been, you know, sort of seesawing between Islamic State and the Sunni tribal fighters who are trying to hold the land there for over a year. But this was a very quick row, and the way the police forces melted away just reminded us of the way the army melted away in Mosul as well.
People are talking about the fall of Ramadi to the Islamic State as a game changer. Remind us why, Noor.
It's a game changer in a couple of ways. I think that you have to keep in mind the Iraqi forces, the Iraqi army remains very, very weak. And this is despite a U.S.-led program to train up more troops. It's also a game changer because I think it reveals just how poorly the Baghdad government and in some ways America's strategy to support and re-strengthen Iraq's Sunni communities is. Anbar has a long, and Anbar's Sunni tribes have a long history fighting Al-Qaeda and the former insurgency in 2008. They have just not gotten the kind of support needed to be able to mobilize themselves into effective fighting forces. The community there also remains completely divided on its own. You have Anbar tribes and families who still support Islamic State over there. And the campaign to push Islamic State out of Anbar, which the Prime Minister announced last month, was really supposed to be this new strategy to empower Sunnis again, to push out these Sunni extremists from their land. And it's important because it has longer-term consequences on Islamic State and its influence, not just in Iraq and the region, but just militarily driving them out. You need to have buy-in from the Sunni communities in these countries to be able to expel them in the long term. And it's hard to get that buy-in when these Sunni tribes don't feel like they're adequately supported by the government or empowered by the United States to take on Islamic State. And what we've seen here over the past few days is that, you know, that strategy has quickly unraveled, and instead the government is calling in Shiite militias of all forces to help them out. So it's going to be tricky to see how that dynamic unfolds.
Noor, let's just be reminded, of course, the government in Baghdad, Shiite-dominated, as is Iran, its big backer right next door. the Sunni. Of course, the Sunnis under Saddam Hussein had been utterly dominant in Iraq. All that was overturned with the 2003 U.S. invasion. The power structure there turned upside down. Anbar was the heartland of resistance to the Americans in Iraq, though Sunnis were tempted over with arms and money, and ultimately with the awakening, fought alongside Americans to push that back. When the Baghdad government today is calling for volunteers, desperately calling for volunteers to come and fight the Islamic State, are they essentially calling for Shia to fight the Sunni extremists, Noor?
Yes, I mean, exactly. Thanks for that backgrounder. They have tried to replicate the Anbar awakening on a much smaller scale, on a more effective scale. That effort, though it was ultimately successful in driving out al-Qaeda from the province, at least for a couple of years, was really one that left tribes completely divided, sheikhs fighting with each other over power and money and just all-around corruption. That legacy has really hampered more recent efforts to arm and train up the tribes, although it's the template that has been being used as recently as a couple of months ago. I went to a tribal graduation ceremony in a town called Amiriyat al-Fallujah in Anbar province just last week, where thousands of fighters from one tribe were just being trained up and expecting new weapons deliveries either from the Baghdad government or from the U.S. through the government. And a lot of these tribes spoke to us about their eagerness to fight Islamic State, but, you know, their sourness with this experience of a Shiite-led government under Nouri al-Maliki, the former prime minister, who disbanded a lot of the anti-Al-Qaeda tribes. He took them off the government payroll, left them very sour and not willing to really fight Islamic State this time around. In fact, a lot of them switched sides again and went back to being supporters of the new Al-Qaeda incarnate, which is Islamic State. So, you know, the Anbar community remains pretty divided on this, and it's a reflection of divisions within Iraq's Sunni community more broadly, and I think that's what this defeat in Ramadi has really shown. I think on a political level, it's another setback and a very long line of setbacks for the Sunnis of Iraq. Although now with the Shiite militias being called in, there are still ways that maybe this military campaign could go right.
Noor, it was only last month that Vice President Biden was talking about the Islamic State's momentum having been halted, White House saying its strategy was succeeding. They're trying to train up Iraqi forces. That didn't work out well in Ramadi. What about U.S. air bombardment? What was U.S. air power? How big was the air power brought to bear in trying to hold the Islamic State back out of Ramadi?
U.S. airstrikes have been ongoing in Anbar province and around Ramadi. Some American and Iraqi officials we talked to say that the fall of Ramadi, there were a couple of exceptional things at play. There was a crazy dust storm that night that limited visibility, and so there may have been a little less airstrikes that night, and Islamic State took advantage of that. We're also seeing Islamic State constantly shifting its tactics. So where they used to move in these long invisible convoys, they're not doing that anymore. So the U.S. is using all the air power it effectively can, but there's just not as much stuff to strike on the ground anymore. And officials here point out as well that airstrikes are a much better offensive than defensive tactic. So as we saw in Ramadi, you know, this combination of an elite counterterrorism unit, local Anbar police, and Anbar tribal fighters were holding the city against Islamic State incursions sort of repeatedly over the past couple of months. But then Islamic State just slammed in there one night with multiple car and truck suicide bombers, and the police force essentially melted away, showing one of the biggest challenges now, which is holding the land, you know, and that also shows the limits to the U.S. air campaign. The Iraqi forces are just not able to hold the land on their own yet.
ISIS or the Islamic State, not amateurs, a lot of former Saddam Hussein military people in there. and very opportunistic, using the dust storm to come on in. Describe the logistics now. Just 70 miles from Baghdad, is it a kind of an open road into the capital of Iraq itself now? Is Baghdad clearly secure or not, Noor? That's where you're sitting.
Yes, that is where we're sitting, and I actually would like to correct the narrative on this concern. Islamic State is positioned in places much closer to Baghdad than Ramadi already. They are in Fallujah, they're in Abu Ghraib, which is on the outskirts of the capital, just on the edge.
Abu Ghraib, yeah.
I don't think that Ramadi puts Baghdad at risk unless they continue to march in the direction of the capital. Of course, it's a concern. Any incursion closer to the capital they make is a concern. But right now, it's the broader campaign to sweep them out of Anbar and move upwards to Mosul, where they have been entrenched for a year. In a few weeks, we have the 1 year anniversary, if that's what we can call it, of Islamic State sweeping into Mosul. I don't think many people here imagine that they would have been in control of Iraq's second largest city for this long. And the route in Ramadi has completely upended any military planning for Mosul. No one has any idea when that campaign is going to take place. So, you know, everyone is always concerned about Baghdad and the safety of Baghdad, but the defenses of the capital seem okay. Actually, Iraqi officials and American officials always say that part of the problem in other parts, planning for other offensives like in Deji or Mosul, is the fact that they cannot afford to remove the two most effective Iraqi army fighting brigades that are now guarding the capital.
Noor Mahlis with the Wall Street Journal in Baghdad. You're terrific. Thank you very much for being with us today, Noor.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the Islamic State gaining more ground in Iraq, now in charge in Ramadi, about 70 miles from Baghdad. We're asking where this goes, if Iraq can fight back, hold together. Early response to this was, not that big, not that bad. John Kerry was in South Korea, talked about it on Monday, so called it a temporary setback against ISIS or Daesh.
It is possible to have the kind of attack we've seen in Ramadi, but I am absolutely confident in the days ahead that will be reversed. Large numbers of Daesh were killed in the last few days and will be in the next days because that seems to be the only thing they understand.
It'll be reversed. Okay, we'll see. Here's Colonel Steve Warren, spokesman at the Pentagon, also on Monday with a similar message. Setback.
We've said all along that there are going to be ebbs and flows. Is a difficult, complex, bloody fight, and there's going to be victories and there's going to be setbacks. And this is a setback.
Difficult, complex, bloody, no question about that. The Islamic State looking at it a little more cut and dry. ISIS uploaded a video of crowds in Mosul on the same day, Monday, cheering the fall of Ramadi. Here's a man in the video saying that Islamic State conquest of Ramadi was just the beginning of greater victories for the Islamic State.
The conquest of Anbar is just the beginning of the conquest of Baghdad, Najaf, and Karbala. Now the conquest has begun. Now the fighting has begun.
Just begun, here we go. And, of course, a lot of questions in Washington as well, and criticism of the Obama administration's response in Iraq. Here's Republican House Speaker John Boehner.
When a major city in Iraq, Ramadi, gets overrun by ISIL, and the administration says, well, it's just a temporary setback. It's 70 miles from Baghdad. It's time for the president to get serious about this threat to Americans and our allies all around the world.
Let's dig in here. Joining us now from Washington is Sarhang Hamsaid. He's a senior program officer for the Middle East and North Africa programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Sarhang Hamsaid, thank you very much for being with us today.
Sure. Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Derek Harvey, director of the Global Initiative on Civil Society and Conflict at the University of South Florida. He was director of the Afghan-Pakistan Center of Excellence at U.S. Central Command, worked with General Petraeus in 2009 to lead that organization. He's a retired Army colonel. Derek Harvey, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Tom, glad to be here.
Temporary setback. We hear the Pentagon and the Secretary of State saying, Derek, how do you rate the odds of that?
Well, I don't think it's a temporary setback. I think it should be seen as a major wake-up call for the administration and for the leadership in Baghdad. Clearly, things are not working as well as the administration has believed. They've underestimated the threat. And I think they've poorly executed the lines of operation, you know, the counter-finance, counter-foreign fighter flow, all the different lines of operations that they have, you know, building, training, and equipping the Iraqi security forces. They've not been well-resourced. They've not been well-led. And unfortunately, I don't think we're executing very well.
Sarhang, is it a matter of execution on a strategy, or is there a flaw in the strategy, something fundamental here that's not working?
I think a combination of both. I mean, the fall of Ramadi was in the making for over a year. Parts of it was an ebb and flow for more than a year. But there's a political chess and a military chess happening in Anbar. If real or perceived, it's a reality. And if the strategy does not take that into consideration, the larger political issues at stake, I think the military strategy, getting some grounds today, lost the other day, will not solve the situation. This is in the Sunni heartland, and the Sunni heartland are very sensitive. I mean, they revolted against the Shia-led government, army. Now, with the sensitivity that the Shia militias are bringing is great. So any gains made elsewhere in Diyala and in the north of Mosul, where they were not necessarily pure Sunni heartland, were positive indicators. But I think regaining Ramadi will not be as easy in a Sunni heartland. And I think the Sunnis, many of them see this situation as a difficult choice between the Islamic State, a good number of them who do not like, and Shia militias that they do not like. So definitely there is a need for a change of strategy.
You've got your Iraqi Sunnis. Of course, some have joined the Islamic State, but many others feel very put upon by them, many displaced from their homes. Many have fought with them as well, but the revenge or pushback on that from the Islamic State can be very severe. I mean, in the end, Derek Harvey, how do you see the stakes here? I want to look at what it may take to get Ramadi back, whether this can be reversed, but what are the stakes? Is the integrity of Iraq itself on the line here? It sure looks that way on the map. There's a lot of turf gone.
Well, I think, you know, we have to understand that we're deeply involved in a communal struggle. And at its core, it appears to be Sunni Arabs against the Shia-dominated Baghdad government. And if you're not committed to the Islamic State, you're still in a difficult position because you fear the Shia militias that have had atrocities against Sunni Arabs in the north already in Diyala province. It's been widely reported and documented. And then they've been ignored and undermined by the Baghdad government over the last year, year and a half.
The Sunnis, yeah.
The Sunnis have. You know, the fall of Ramadi is not a surprise. It's been an ongoing campaign by the Islamic State for well over a year. And the military resources have not been committed out there in any sufficient way. The tribal initiatives were not really supported. They weren't armed with anything more than AK-47s. The training wasn't very aggressive or very sophisticated. And the organization and resourcing and leadership committed to that part of the effort has not been a real focus. The focus has been securing Baghdad and the environs around Baghdad and creating a buffer zone to protect the Shia heartland, if you will. I just think Ramadi in the West has been, for the most part, ignored, and this is the result you get when you don't have committed leadership trying to bring the whole country together. At the end of the day, it is a political problem.
So, Hung, you grew up in northern Iraq. Does this picture hold together? Are we effectively seeing the not-so-slow-motion breakup of Iraq right now?
Well, definitely the Iraq that many people knew it has changed, and it is happening, unfortunately, in the most violent form. And there are a good number of Iraqis who believe that the days ahead will be even more bloody. And that is that's important to take into consideration. The longer, if we take a step back from Ramadi and look at the picture, why do we have this situation, I think is important. And it speaks to the power structure in Iraq that did not quite work over the past decade. The Sunnis see that they have not received weapons, they have not received the support that they needed and asked for from the coalition, from the Iraqi government, because they believe that the Shia leadership in Iraq and effectively Iran wants to bring them to their knees and make them beg for power and for support. And once their areas are liberated through the power of the Shia, they will be denied a future stake in Iraq's politics. And this is the larger issue at play, that the political structure and what happens afterwards. If we really zoom in today into the rabbit holes of the fights here and there, we will lose the bigger picture of, even if you win the fight, if you clear Ramadi today or tomorrow, then how do you hold on to it? How do you stabilize it? And how do you govern? And we started from the failure of governance that led to instability, that led to losing ground. And if we do not, the strategy does not look at that level, whether from the Iraqi government, from the regional powers, from the international community, I think we will be just in battles and back and forth.
Sounds to me like that question of Iraq holding together is still very much just hanging there. Here was Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary, on Tuesday saying, hey, let's calm down here. It's sort of the ebb and flow message again. Josh Earnest.
Are we going to light our hair on fire every time that there is a setback in the campaign against ISIL? Or are we going to take very seriously our responsibility to evaluate those areas where we succeed and evaluate where steps are necessary for us to change our strategy where we've sustained setbacks?
Get in there and fix it. Ray in Milwaukee. Ray, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. What do you see?
Yeah, hi to you and your guests. I want to state the obvious. When we overthrew that government several years back, Iraq had been put together by the British. It was an artificial construct from the beginning, and it took somebody like Saddam Hussein, who tortured his own people, to hold it together for as long as it stayed together. Why did we not allow the country to be partitioned, to name their own areas, their own, the way they wanted to name them, not impose a name like Iraq, this artificial idea? And the only thing we should have insisted on was that the three areas, the Kurdish, the Sunni, and the Shia, that they agree to share the oil wealth, so each citizen in all three areas got an equal share of the oil. And if we had done that 12 years ago, Tom, we wouldn't be looking at this Frankenstein monster. No more military aid into that country, period.
Ray, I don't know why you're wrong, or if you're wrong. Sarhang, you grew up Iraqi. Is that torture to your ears to hear the idea of it being partitioned? Let it devolve into these three areas? Is that what's happening anyway?
I don't think it is that simple. I mean, even if you entertain that idea to say let's partition it, there are some issues that are tied to this and cause this. So the changing of power structure and the Shia leadership probably overreaching for dominance in areas well beyond the areas that had influence. But also there is a fundamental issue with the ideology and radicalism here. Today you have a few weeks ago, you had an explosion, an attack in the city of Erbil, in the Kurdish heartland.
Yes.
Those who were conspirators in the explosions were Kurds.
Why?
You and the viewers may know that the Kurds have been out of this Sunni-Shia schism. So there is other issues that are now interwoven together. And so it is not as simple as saying, split it up and it will be fine. I think even if you partition Iraq, some of the core issues of being good neighbors with each other and competition over resources, regional power dynamics between Iran and the Gulf state and Turkey will still be at play. So the proxy issues will still continue. So a strategy really has to look at this broader complexity of the region. So focusing on defeating the Islamic State today will not resolve these other issues of how do you maintain peace and stability in that country and that part of the world.
Derek Harvey, I mean, it has a kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't look now. It's hard to even think of letting it go into pieces now when a huge piece is controlled by the Islamic State. That's kind of endorsing the caliphate, and who knows where that goes. On the other hand, we don't see evidence post-Saddam of this holding together in a smooth functioning way.
Well, Tom, I think you're right. The problem of creating many Islamic states, and it's not even certain we'd have one Sunni Arab region there,
yep.
that we might have multiple ones that would be further destabilizing and radicalized in all likelihood. But this has been part of Zarqawi, who started this campaign originally back in 2002, 2003, to create a war between Shia and Sunni. He wanted to polarize the society in Iraq and create this type of sectarian civil war. And al-Baghdadi and his successors have followed that strategy heretofore.
Well, so have the leaders in Baghdad, in a way. Nuri al-Maliki was infamous for cutting Sunnis out.
Yes, he was. And you know, I just want to pivot back to one point right now, which is, you know, we invested a lot in Prime Minister Abadi replacing Nuri al-Maliki, and with the hope that he would be able to begin to build outreach and political reconciliation and an inclusive government. Unfortunately, he is being attacked continuously from within the Shia coalition that opposes him. Former Prime Minister Maliki and others, to include Haider al-Amari and folks associated with the Badr and Shia-aligned organizations, are undermining him, the Iraqi security forces, trying to isolate him and weaken him.
Why? Do they think they can do better? They didn't. They lost Mosul themselves, right? Do they think that they're going to give up and just ally with Iran? And why would they want a body out?
Well, they want to secure power for their group in this intra-Shia power struggle over the direction of Baghdad and how it's going to align with their political and religious allegiances to the Supreme Leader Khamenei
in Iran
and some of these other dynamics that are at play. Again, this is much more complicated and complex than the caller, probably understands.
Well, perhaps, but none of it to me says strength or resilience in Baghdad. Chris in Aiken, South Carolina. Chris, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I just wanted to say that I was serving with the 3rd Infantry Division in Iraq. I served in 2008 in Baghdad and then 2010 to 2011 in Ramadi.
Wow.
We were stationed in Camp Ramadi, but we were also working heavily in the Anbar Operations Center and the Anbar Police Directorate inside the city of Ramadi.
Yeah.
And I can only speak from my experience there, but we were seeing some very significant progress being made in terms of stability operations. And my position is that I believe that one of the biggest failures was by not negotiating the status of forces agreement and by withdrawing a little too hastily. We really left a lot of vulnerabilities with the Sunni alliance that we had there in Ramadi.
George Bush decided that he'd gone as far as he could on that agreement, that he couldn't make any more concessions, Chris.
Yes, I know that that was there's a lot of bigger strategic political debate with that. I really think that that could have been really a way forward to move.
But would it be better, Chris, if American troops were still there? Is that what you're suggesting?
It's very politically unsalient, but I believe that if we had forces there for at least another 5 years, we could have seen a lot more solidification of that stability.
Does it hurt to see it rolling back this way after what you put into it?
It does, and I can only speak for myself, but I know that there were thousands of lives that were lost from Americans, and it is unfortunate to just see that retrograde. But I do think that partitioning the country at this point is not an option. As you mentioned, that would be conceding to the caliphate, the Islamic State, and that is just an option that we cannot pursue at all.
Chris, I appreciate your call very much. Thank you for calling in from Aiken. We're talking about the Islamic State gaining more ground in Iraq now, Ramadi. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hi,
Hi, this is Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for listening. Audible.com is our sponsor today. Audible.com carries over 180,000 book titles, plus magazines and newspapers. Many of the books we talk about on the show can be downloaded and listened to whenever, wherever you want. And as an incentive to get you to try this service, they're offering On Point listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/onpoint, download a free title, and listen. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/onpoint. That's audible.com/onpoint to get started today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Islamic State gaining more ground in Iraq, now in charge in Ramadi, capital of Anbar province, just 70 miles from Baghdad. We're asking where this goes, if Iraq can fight back, hold together. Sarhang Hamasaid is with us. He's with the U.S. Institute of Peace, senior program officer there for the Middle East and North Africa, leads the Iraq program there, joins us from Washington. And in Washington, Derek Harvey is with us. He's out of the University of South Florida, director of the Global Initiative on Civil Society and Conflict there. Worked with David Petraeus, he's a retired colonel from the U.S. Army. Here's Michael Morell, former deputy director of the CIA, in an interview on ABC's This Week on Sunday. Says even though ISIS, Islamic State fighters have taken hold in Ramadi, the U.S. is still making gains, and Syria is the big problem.
We have taken back about 25% of the territory that ISIS took in Iraq. Still a lot more work to be done, but we are doing well in Iraq. It's Syria where we need to do better.
Well, or maybe both. Iraq's prime minister has called up Shiite militias to fight in Anbar province after so many have fled the city and the Islamic State took over. Here's a spokesman for the militia, the Shiite militia, saying they will buck up the government forces.
We will be a real backbone for the security forces, and we will support the legitimacy in Iraq represented in the government and parliament.
Interpreted there by PBS, but of course that's Shia militia. And in other fights here, they have not exactly gone easy on the local Sunni population when they have stepped in, and that's created a lot of resentment. Esteban is calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Esteban, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. It really hurts to see Iraq falling apart right now, especially taking the city of Ramadi, because I was deployed overseas, and I'm sure a lot of the governments that are listening to us, I really believe President Obama made a big mistake when he pulled the troops out of Iraq. And it's something that you're seeing right now in Syria. You're seeing it in Iraq, and most likely it's going to even happen in Afghanistan. A lot of these soldiers from Saddam Hussein, like you mentioned it earlier, were people that ran away into Jordan, Syria, and they hibernated there for many years, regrouping, retraining, and a lot of these people has military experience that were under Saddam Hussein.
Yes.
A lot of these people are from the Ba'ath Party. Nobody has mentioned in the Ba'ath Party. And many times people were saying Iran was supplying or helping Syria, and now it turns around that Iran is helping the Iraqi Shiites to take over ISIS. So I think we have a big mess coming into our hands all over again. I think the United States really needs to send people on the ground again if they want to retake all these things, because otherwise it's going to spill all over.
Esteban, were you in the Army, the Marines, what, in Iraq?
I was part of the Marine Expeditionary there.
And you say Obama made a mistake, but of course George W. Bush was the one who made the agreement with Iraq about the timetable. I mean, I'm not saying Obama's done perfectly at all here, but just for clarity.
Yeah, well, President Bush, basically what we did, we helped a lot of the Shiite people that were oppressed by the Sunnis, and along the way the Kurds became autonomous. There was a lot of work that was done over there and improvising a lot of city halls, schools, things like that. It was a lot of civil work done for these people as well. It's not all that bad by just going in there.
Yeah. But Esteban, you say we should still be there even now. I mean, you know how tough it was to serve there. You know how many people were lost and how much it cost the U.S. Do you really think in 2015, 16, we should have American boots on the ground there?
We're making a mistake. If we don't stop these people right now and push them back, They're going to continue moving forward. They haven't stopped. They started in Syria. President Obama said that we're going to help these people to fight to counter the terrorists.
Yeah.
And Biden has been doing this. People has been moving forward, and they continue moving forward into Baghdad.
Well, I can't argue that they've been moving forward. How far they go, John Kerry says, we'll push them back. But Esteban, I really appreciate your call right there. Let me get one more, if I may. Stanton, Virginia, Philip is calling. Hi, Philip, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
First off, let me say this, because I could see this being taken, what I'm about to say is being taken pretty badly, but to the Marines and to the infantry that were there, you know, that they did have a major sacrifice. So it does really suck that that we're losing key cities and grounds that were fought hard for.
Hundreds and thousands lost, and lost in this territory. Anbar, are you in the military, Philip? What's your status?
I am. I'm a logistics officer with the Army, and I just returned from there. I've spent the last year there. So that, in Kuwait, that's where we were supplying from. We were intimately involved in resupply there. But I could tell you this. In my opinion, I think that putting boots on the ground is not the right answer. I think that the one thing that the Iraqis, just like most every other army in the world except for us, they don't do very well logistically. They can't get supplies on time. They can't manufacture their own parts for these very sophisticated vehicles that we've given them. So I think it's in our best interest that we just continue to strengthen our logistics program to support the Iraqis. I mean, we're doing the same thing for the French and the Italians in Africa, and they're making a big ground against the enemy.
Philip, let me ask you. So you've been doing logistics for exactly what we're seeing unfold here in Iraq. Does that mean supporting U.S. support of the Iraqi army, or U.S. was it logistics support of American airstrikes against the Islamic State? Which, or both, Philip?
Both.
So you're helping get material to the Iraqi forces who just kind of ran out of Ramadi ultimately. Was that surprising to you?
Well, I don't know. To me, Ramadi is nothing more than when Stonewall Jackson got within 70 miles of Washington, D.C. You know, he got close, but he couldn't take it. You know, and the ISIS doesn't have the logistical framework that we have. So there's no way they can, and especially as we strengthen our logistical position and get supplies to the Iraqis faster and better. We're going to win. It's just a matter of logistics. It's the same thing that we've done in every war. We just win logistically.
And no boots on the ground, why not? We've had a couple of military calling in saying, do it. You say no. You're just back from there, Philip. Why not?
It's going to be the same regardless. I think we're just going to return back to the Iraq war the way it was. And that's not a winning situation, in my opinion. But I think the Iraqis need to win their war.
Philip, I really appreciate your call. This is just terrific sort of firsthand insight here. Just back from Kuwait, working in logistics there, supporting the Iraqi forces and U.S. troops. Thank you for calling from Stanton, Virginia. Derek Harvey, officer just back with the Army, says eventually the American-backed Baghdad government will win because of the power of American logistics and supply. Do you agree, Derek? Is it that clear?
I don't think it's that clear at all. I think we're going to have to change our strategy, the way we resource it, change some of the concepts and approaches, and give some new authorities for more direct action, like we saw with the Abu Sayyaf raid into Syria. But, Tom, I'd like to just say that I think in many ways our government has been measuring this and coming to the wrong conclusions based upon bad data points. We heard Mike Morrell say that as one measure, you know, we've taken back 25% of the ground that ISIS had in Iraq.
Yeah.
But that's really not true. It's the major forces have been cleared from those areas, but ISIS is still working their way back into Diyala and into southern Saladin, and so they're not gone, and it's not a good measure anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The number of sorties and bombs dropped is not a good measure, nor is the amount of logistics you put forward. You have to go after the capabilities of the enemy, degrade their leadership, their organization, and eventually break their will. And that was done in 2007 and 2008, and there was a good situation left there in 2011. But the political outcome was not aggressively pursued, and it eroded from there.
Well, can you
make sure that we don't fall back into the same trap?
Can you pursue the political outcome effectively from afar? I mean, that's what Petraeus did on the ground in Anbar with the Sunni Awakening a decade ago. Can America effectively, you know, work with the politics here when they're not on the ground?
I don't think the leadership in Baghdad or in the Sunni Arab community believe that the United States is fully committed and engaged and serious about achieving the outcomes. And in part, that is because they don't see the U.S. on the ground in a serious way, nor seriously politically engaged in this effort. And both of those come hand in hand, and I think that's a major failing.
So you're an on-the-ground guy? You would put boots back in Iraq?
I would put a combined joint task force, some additional aviation, attack aviation, and enhance a special operations force advisory mission with more direct action. We can't get there with 3,000 people on the ground that are primarily doing training and building of the Iraqi security forces.
You know what we've spent and lost already there. What makes it worth that kind of effort again? You heard Philip, who just said we'll be right back in the Iraq war as we knew it, which was not great.
Tom, I don't think it's the same kind of effort. Putting in 10,000 soldiers in a different role, not clearing street by street, not putting in combat outposts in the middle of Ramadi, but doing a great number of other things makes a major difference in this type of a campaign today. I don't think anybody's recommending you put in two or three U.S. divisions.
Ned in Boston, thank you for calling, Ned. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just really worry about the fact that the United States is clearly doesn't have the political will, especially given the fact that we are, you know, heading into this 2016 election, and Obama doesn't want his legacy to have anything to do with something like this. I just think that this is, if they do take over, if ISIS does take over, I think that the only the nation that can potentially affect this is Iran. And then where does that leave the Middle East?
If Iran takes the bull by the horns, and at some point, people might say already they are, Shahang, what about it? If the U.S. presence doesn't keep the Islamic State from moving further forward and Iran gets even more aggressively involved, I mean, we saw them in Tikrit. There was a lot of talk about Iranians when that was retaken. What about Iran? And might it step up in a heavier way? What would that mean, Sirhan?
I mean, we're already seeing an increasing pattern of the Iranian presence and role, and more visibly, and also increasing just recently, where they say we will be engaged militarily if the Iraqi government asks us to do so. And this is where it really speaks to the deepest fears of the Sunni population in Iraq and the Sunni population in general, because Saudi Arabia and other powers see that the increasing Iranian presence, they see Iran a strong player in Iraq and in Syria and Lebanon and Yemen and other places. So getting into the Sunni heartland of Anbar, definitely they see as a sign of increasing Iranian physical presence, not just influence. And that will definitely affect the calculation of the Sunnis in Iraq and in general. So that is definitely a sensitive point going forward.
I mean, you have Iraqi Shiites who seem to seek a closer relationship with Iran. Obviously they do, some of them. You've got Sunni who don't want to be involved in that. Maybe the United States should step back and let nature take its course here. Let it, again, go to something maybe dominated by Iran, but it already is in many ways. We're not there. The Sunnis are going their own way under the Islamic State in Ramadi as we speak right now. What's the strategic problem with that, Sirhan?
Well, the bigger problem is that will bring more bloodshed. And if you take a step back, if the U.S. and the international community take a step back and let this organically play out, I think the magnitude of the bloodshed, the radicalization will all go in the direction that the cost of dealing with it later on will be much greater to the region, to the international community, and to the United States. And with the limited time that we have left on the show, I want to attract our attention to something else, Tom, which is, as and I agree that the metric of regaining the 25% land, while it shows some progress, but if you really look down, that as ground has been retaken, the number of internally displaced people are increased from 2 million to 2, 3 million today. Yeah. And as you that the fighting goes on, the number of those displaced people will only go up. And that brings its own tensions. It has its own, it stretches the already limited capability of the Iraqi government and the coalition.
That's a lot of suffering. And in Baghdad, they've got Sunni now, I'm reading here, locked up in mosques because they're afraid if they let them out in Shiite-dominated Baghdad now, they'll have trouble there. You said later the cost will be bigger. We'll have a bigger problem, Sir Hung. We've just got a minute, but describe that. It's hard to understand. Look, it's ominous, but what do you mean? If this continues to go in the direction we saw over this weekend, if it continues to unravel, what's the big price to be paid?
I mean, it could drag in other countries. I mean, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, and others into this this fight. Second, the when this transforms into community killings and the revenge killings that is possible because of different actors sided with the different parties of this fight, some with Islamic State, some with the Iraqi government. So a cycle of vengeance could come in. If you will have time on the side of the Islamic State, so they are indoctrinating and radicalizing communities under their control, so the magnitude of the problem will grow, and it will give inspiration to others elsewhere.
Derek Harvey, we just got half a minute. How soon might Ramadi be taken, or do you think that's not in the cards?
It's going to be a while, but if it is taken, we're going to be back to facing an industrial strength insurgency in the Anbar region around Ramadi. Once you clear it, you have to hold it. Then you have to rebuild the politics of the region as well as the economy. And that's a very long road.
Derek Harvey with the Global Initiative on Civil Society and Conflict at the University of South Florida. Worked with David Petraeus before, a retired U.S. Army colonel. Derek Harvey, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Sir Hung Hamasaid with the U.S. Institute of Peace leads the Iraq program there. Sir Hung, great to have you with us again. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to.
What a picture. Listeners, you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm there too, Tom Ashbrook, NPR. This is On Point.